Well, hey, everybody. This episode of the Press Row Podcast is brought to you by Out of the Park Developments, makers of Out of the Park 18, MLB Manager 2017, and Franchise Hockey Manager 3, the award-winning baseball and hockey sports strategy games. You can get them today on PC, on Mac. You can get them via Steam, or you can get them right from our website at ootpdevelopments.com. I'd love to personally invite you every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on Twitch, twitch.tv/OOTP Developments. Come join our baseball community manager and Press Row Podcast frequent guest TJ Lowerman as he live streams Out of the Park Baseball 18. And that's followed at 10 p.m. Eastern on twitch.tv/OOTP Developments by our franchise hockey manager team. Our franchise hockey manager, Adam Burnett, is joined by franchise hockey manager producer Jeff Riddles every Wednesday night at 10 p.m. on twitch.tv/OOTP Developments as they go through all sorts of different fun and interesting campaigns on Franchise Hockey Manager 3. So that is OOTP night across the world on YouTube, starting Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. and followed up at 10 p.m. on twitch.tv/OOTP Developments. But if you can't join us live, that's fine. Everything that we do is archived to our YouTube page. It's youtube.com/OOTP Developments. So all of the live streams are archived there, so you can catch up with it later. And just this week, we have introduced a brand new tutorial series hosted by the CEO and lead designer of Out of the Park Baseball 18, Marcus Heinsohn. He has done a series of tutorials that help you get into the game, whether you're a newcomer or a longtime player. Marcus goes through a whole bunch of interesting stuff, guaranteed to find things that you didn't know, even if you are an out-of-the-park veteran. So come check us out, youtube.com/OOTP Developments anytime, and twitch.tv/OOTP Developments Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. live with TJ, and Wednesday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern live with Adam and Jeff. Thanks, everybody. Enjoy the show.
The second Tuesday in July. It's a day that holds special significance for fans of sports video games, as traditionally, that's when the latest NCAA football game would have released, and in the process, kicked off the sports video game season. Unfortunately, we've gone yet another year without college football or a dedicated college sports game of any kind. It's been 4 years since NCAA Football 14 was canceled, nearly 8 years since the last college basketball game came out. This last Tuesday would have marked the release of an NCAA Football 18. Even just mentioning that fact on Twitter resulted in a lot of emotional responses, so we're going to discuss where we're at right now as far as college sports video games are concerned. We're going to look back a bit on the NCAA Football series and then discuss the potential future for college games in this episode of the Press Row Podcast. I'm Brian Weedeye, Pastor Padre. Let's introduce those with me for this episode. First up, from Out of the Park Developments, it's Rich Grisham. How you been, Rich? What have you been playing lately, Rich?
I am doing great, Brian, as always. Great to talk to you. I've been playing a lot of the golf club, too. Continuing to play that.
I'm hooked on it. How are you doing in our online society tournaments? You hanging in there?
No, but that's okay. Because I'm still enjoying it, because the way that I enjoy playing the golf club is to be playing in the tournaments, but then to make sure that I add the ghost players of friends of mine who have already played rounds in the tournament. So I feel like I'm playing with mm-hmm. you guys and as well as against you, because I can see where your shot goes. Mm-hmm. So that adds an additional element of fun to that for me. That's pretty much what I do, is I play in the tournaments of you and that your society and PDOT Society have. And as a matter of fact, there's like a major going on over in Pete's, which I'm trying to participate in. My travel this week has made it very difficult.
Yeah.
But I continue to play the golf club too and thoroughly enjoy it. But I'm scared. I am scared to move up clubs. I know mm-hmm. that I'm supposed to do that now, but I'm too afraid because I'm incredibly consistent right now. Yeah. And consistent, not excellent, but consistently, definitely not bad. Like, I'm consistent on the tee shots. I hit it well, solid down the middle between 260 yards to 280 yards, typically topping out at 273 to 275, all depending upon wind and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I'm basically a par golfer is what I am at this point. And in the golf club too, that's no small feat. Well, it's a very challenging game.
It depends on the course also.
1,000%.
We have played a few tournaments where we've both performed well, and then we had one where we were shooting like 8 over each round.
Right.
Yeah, so yeah, absolutely. So that difficulty swing has been brutal in some regards, but then it's pretty interesting to see how it affects everyone, or less so. We have apparently some amazing players in our society who are putting up ridiculous numbers regardless, of course.
Yeah, that's unpleasant. but, you know, look, if you're that good, then God bless you, because it must be a lot of work to get that good, because I'm perfectly fine with the challenge of the golf club too. I know some of our friends have a lot of problems with it, particularly putting. I see regular conversations with, you know, Twitter friends of mine, people I know from the sports gaming community. And while I'm a big fan, obviously, as you are too, there's people that the putting in particular really drives them crazy, and they're having a hard time with it. So I'm thoroughly enjoying it. One random question I have. You have to pay an entry fee to get into a tournament. Where does it say what the entry fee is, and where does it say how much money you have? Because there's like different money lists. You know, there's one for the society, and then there's one for you. I never even see how much I'm paying. Like, what is that?
Yeah, so I don't think it displays the entry fee, actually. I've wondered about that. And I didn't know if it was just on my end as someone who sets up the society, or you know, if just a regular members could see what it was. Because I think you're right. I don't think it's visible. You just go and you press the button for the entry fee, and I could just take everybody's money that way.
And what do you buy with the money that you have anyway?
Yeah, so that so you're getting. Oh, now you've stumped me because I'm forgetting, because that's mostly used in your career mode. We've also got Millennium. Millennium, you wanna help us out here on this one? What is the currency really used for? Because I'm forgetting. I'm blanking on that.
Currency is normally in the golf club too, is used for, obviously, like I said, entry fees, upgrading your society.
Yeah, so your actual individual society, right? So
correct.
Yes. Yeah. So that's where I was forgetting. So you've got your individual career society, which you can upgrade, Rich, with your currency, and then there's the separate society currency, which is an amount that as the administrator of the society, I collect. And then for us, spend on upgrading our clubhouse and options as far as how many tournaments in a season and stuff, if that makes any sense. It's essentially two career modes, one shared with other people, one on your own, and two different currencies.
And not to be whatever, the more you talk about it, the less I care about it. I'm just enjoying playing golf.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I'm also playing real quick is I continue my Road to the Show character. And if you recall last week, I mentioned I got my overall up from a 68 to an 80 by buying the training points.
Yeah.
Since then, my statistics have gone inverse to the rise. Like my guy barely ever hits the ball, and I don't know what's happened, but I think I'm something like 7 for 92 or some crazy amount. Terrible performance offensively.
Have you changed your approach at the plate just because you have higher ratings? Because I think subconsciously you get higher ratings, you tend to swing more thinking it's going to compensate for you. I think that's the case in baseball games a lot of the time. But I'm curious, do you get that sense with yourself, or is it just a slump?
No, it's just a slump. I'm just not hitting the ball, but I'm definitely not approaching it differently. It's shocking to me how much better of a hitter I was when I was rated a 68. It blows my mind because I've stayed in the same competition. It's my second year I'm in the major leagues, but it's just been brutal. Not just not good, but brutal. And I've got some good ratings. So I don't know. Also, as strange as I'm like, well, might as well get some more training points. And every time I go to the menu to get more training points, it tells me the server is offline.
Oh.
So I haven't even been able to go get that. And I don't know if it's me, but like the rest of the online stuff on my PlayStation 4 seems to be working. So
it's probably,
that's a whole thing happening.
It's probably not you. There continue to be server issues there.
I'm not sure if you guys know this, but there are adverse effects to HGH, Rich, so you should be careful of those.
Yeah.
When buying steroids.
It's good to know. Now this is all, you know, just virtual, so I'm going to abuse them to the maximum.
All right.
Just go to your Rich McGuire.
Yeah. Just, you know, he's going to have to increase his hat size pretty soon.
There you go.
So, no surprise, we've got the artist formerly known as Millennium OS here. He is recently rebranded to Mills Gaming TV on Twitter and Twitch. Welcome back, Chris. What have you been spending your time playing lately?
Well, lately my time was spent on the show Showdown. I was out in San Diego for a week for the play-by-play for that. Mm-hmm. Just a small tournament for community guys that the show brought in. But what is immediately when I came back and what I was doing before that was I was playing a lot of the show Diamond Dynasty. I've gotten very much heavily back involved. They hooked me back with All-Star events and then the Moonshot event. The Moonshot event for me was the most fun event they've had. It was all common pitchers and then all guys with power above 70.
Yeah, I kind of laughed when that came out. I said, this looks like a response to everybody complaining that the power has gone down lately. We're going to let you hit home runs because we're putting crappy pitchers in. But as far as the events go, do you feel like they've improved over time? Because at the start of the year, at least, the events were kind of iffy as far as their structure and the rewards and the necessary time you had to put into them to get the rewards not being worth it necessarily, being able to spend your time elsewhere maybe being a more valuable way to play.
I think for the top players, they're absolutely worth it, obviously. The guys that go 12-0 easy. Now, if you're a regular player, you need to look at your statistics. You can actually go to the Show Nation and click Search Gamer and see what your online statistics are and look at your win percentage. If your win percentage is like 60%, like my online win percentage is about 60%. I know that if I want to win 40 games in a three inning games in this, like this event is the reward is like a 96 Jacoby Ellsbury. Mm-hmm. That means that I'm going to have to play approximately 60 games
in a week,
time frame. Yeah. Now these are three inning games, so they go by in about 10 minutes. But that's still, I mean, that's a grind. There is a grind to these events. I think with the cards that are going through now, I think it's very fair. Beginning of the season, I was with you. Mm-hmm. I was one of the people that actively spoke out and said, I'm never going to play that many games.
Right.
But as my team has gotten better and I've been able to team build a little bit more, be a little more creative with my team building, I've noticed that I can put it together teams that can be competitive.
Do people play online? Do they play differently in those events? Are there certain tactics they utilize? Because in a three-inning game, obviously, in most cases, or in many cases, it's probably the first person to score is going to win, right? So are you facing cheesier type tactics, have you found? Or is it pretty comparable to normal?
I won't say cheesy. Again, we'll go back to this tournament that just happened on Wednesday. It's a battle royale tactic. You put your number one hitter at the top of the lineup.
Try to get him an extra bat.
But the other part of that is in a three-inning game, if the series is three-inning games or the event is, a lot of people completely ditch their starting rotation for common pitchers because you have to get under the 78 overall cap. So that's a good way to do it. But your common pitcher has to pitch at least one batter before you can go to your bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think it was six runs out of all the leadoff hitters in that tournament, and I think it was 10 games, six of them scored in either a home run or another, or I think Kemp got on base and stole two bases and scored on a wild pitch.
Okay.
So, like,
well, that's justice.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, like, it's a different mindset and – again, I was one of the people last year that said I don't like Battle Royale because I don't like three-inning games.
Mm.
But if you have to change the way you think about how you play baseball. It's a three-inning game. Your starting rotation means about the least on your team. You have to have at least four bullpen arms, probably five. And then your bench has to be, because of the caps and events, your bench has to be like a bronze player that has 90 contact against righties.
Mm-hmm.
So that way you can really stack your starting lineup, or like there's a bunch of different strategies you can employ. That's what I use. So I like the creativity involved in these events. Even the Moonshot event, you had to be under an 80 overall, even though you could use diamonds. So you couldn't put an entire diamond lineup together unless you took your entire bench out of the game.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's fun. I can understand where people that are baseball purists don't like it, but I would say that I would hope everybody would at least try it.
Mm-hmm. And I do think the process of, like you said, strategy, putting the teams together within the confines of the specific layout that they've come to for each event, which is unique. I think that's probably the most fun part of it. And then getting to the games and getting all the time you have to spend doing it is maybe what discourages me a little bit about it. But that's just me. It's cool to see other people really enjoying it. So what else you been playing, man?
The other thing I've been playing a lot of, it just came out this week, so I got right back on it because it came out right before I went to San Diego, was Fire Pro. Mm-hmm. Fire Pro World is a 2D wrestling game that has not been out for 10 years, has designed a new version, and it's out early access on Steam right now, which makes uploading characters so easy. It is the most sim wrestling experience I've ever played, and it has, I think it was in the top 10 on Steam when it came out. It even got some like big time pub for as popular as it got.
Yeah.
So it's a very cult classic game. It is a game that is an acquired taste, but is a very, very rewarding game to play.
Yeah, and I think we're going to talk about that in the next episode with a couple other people who will have spent time with the game at that point. It's definitely an interesting one, especially, like you said, it has such a cult following. And I saw the response to the initial announcements about it being in development and then its release date, and there was a lot of excitement about it, and it seems to be really delivering at this point. And since it's in early access, it's only going to continue getting better. So we'll be talking about that more coming up.
Well, hey everybody, we're going to take just a moment from this argument between me and Brian to talk about our sponsors this week, and we're really excited about this. HelloFresh is a fantastic meal delivery service that I am a current customer. So it makes me really happy to be able to have them sponsor the show. It's kind of a win-win. So HelloFresh is on a mission to save home cooking because they think it's just too good to go away. They are all about making cooking more fun, so they focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. They think of themselves as a farm-to-box company because they want everyone to have access to fresh ingredients that inspire great meals. But they also are a couch-to-kitchen company because they feel that the best way to kick those 5 p.m. excuses is by feeling unstoppable in the kitchen. So I mentioned I'm a customer, and I use HelloFresh regularly now. And they do a really nice job of making it easy and fun. So you get this big old box with several recipes in it. When you open it up, everything is nice and cool because they keep it cold with these ice packs and these temperature controlled boxes. And you take all the stuff out and it looks great. And they give you very clear instructions. It's really just about making sure that you put aside the time, and it's not a lot of time, but you got about 30 minutes, right? So 30 minutes of time and you're gonna feel like a champion. HelloFresh is the meal delivery kit service that makes cooking more fun so that, I said, you can focus on the whole experience, not just the final plate. And each week, HelloFresh creates new delicious recipes with step-by-step instructions, again, designed to take around 30 minutes for everyone from novices to seasoned home cooks short on time. And they're right, because I'm no cook. I'm not a cook, and I was cooking along with my 9-year-old son. We had some fun doing it. HelloFresh sources the freshest ingredients measured to the exact quantities needed so there's no food waste. They employ 2 full-time registered dietitians on staff who review each recipe to ensure that it's nutritionally balanced. And I mentioned they deliver this food right to your doorstep in a recyclable insulated box for free. And they are now offering light summer meals, and they've also just introduced breakfast options. So, you know, and maybe the most important thing, it's less than $10 a meal. So I mentioned they delivered the box to me. The meal that I had the first night was this really good wasabi lime salmon. I love salmon. I love wasabi. And this was a fantastic meal. Really enjoyed it. I also was cooking up some Southwestern stuffed peppers with ground beef, Canona, and Monterey Jack cheese. It was fantastic. And it was a really fun way to prepare the meal and to eat some really good food. And I got to have some fun with my son cooking as well. So here's what we want you to do. You're a fan of the Press Rub podcast. You listen all the time. We appreciate that. Help us keep making this show and use the promo code PRESSROW30 when you go to HelloFresh.com. If you use that code of PRESSROW30, you're going to get $30 off your first week of deliveries. $30 off your first week of deliveries. So here's what you do. You go to HelloFresh.com. You enter PRESSROW30 when you subscribe, and you're going to get $30 off. That is a deal that's hard to beat. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Press Row podcast. Thank you to HelloFresh, and enjoy the rest of the show.
Let's get on to the main subject of this episode, and it's college sports video games and the loss of the NCAA football franchise. And I'll tell you what, this has been a real saga I've been covering for, 8 years now? It's hard to believe it's been that long, but I have really from start to finish, and there were other lawsuits that preceded all of this, but it really started in 2009 when two different lawsuits started to gain traction, and that was Ed O'Bannon, who was suing over the appearance of, well, himself and other players who were no longer in college basketball appearing as legends on classic teams, and Sam Keller, who sued about current players not being paid. Now, the thing is, of course, their appearances in these games and other players' appearances, quote-unquote appearances, are based off of their likenesses. So we're not talking about names. So their names were not included, but physical characteristics, skill sets, hometowns, you know, left-handed versus right-handed, race, you go on and on. They were represented as their real life selves in the games, just even their uniform numbers, but they just didn't have their names. So they felt that since their likenesses were being used in their opinions, they should be compensated for that. So the two lawsuits ended up merging, and it continued to be led by O'Bannon, and it became a class action suit, and eventually the class action, or the class won. They won the lawsuit against the NCAA. Now, EA and the CLC got out of that lawsuit before a ruling was formed because they settled. They paid $60 million to get out, so they were no longer liable at that point. But the NCAA did lose. The judge found that they had violated antitrust laws and that players should be able to collect money in a trust that they would receive after they got done with school. That then moved on to appeals court, where the second part was reversed, the part where players would be able to be paid for things like appearing in video games, or selling their signatures, or selling merchandise, jerseys with their name on it, for example. Maybe even getting a cut of broadcast fees in the future. That appeals court reversed that ability, so once again, they could not be paid in any way. That was the big blow to the potential for sports video games, for college games to come back, because what needs to happen, there needs to be a system in place so that the likes of an EA Sports can pay and obtain the rights to the players, just like they get with the NFL, with the Players Association, just like 2K gets with the NBA or EA gets with UFC. They're getting the rights to the individuals. EA has wanted to pay for the names. They've wanted to pay for the players, but the NCAA won't allow it. They will kick kids off of teams for the dumbest of reasons, and they certainly have not allowed anyone to pay players to be in a video game. So the case then went to the Supreme Court, or at least it was presented to the Supreme Court. Now, the Supreme Court only hears about 1% of the cases that are brought to them, so it wasn't a surprise when they turned down hearing this case. What that means is the ruling of the appeals court stands. NCAA violated antitrust, but there is no system in place for players to be compensated for their own likenesses and their own ability to make money off of their names. So that's where we're at now. Sadly, 4 years later, since the NCAA football franchise was canceled, 8 years since those lawsuits began, we are really not much closer to seeing them return because of that. We need something else to happen so that not only the players can be compensated and then appear in the video games, but so that the conferences, the individual universities, those parties which were pulling out of the video game to prevent being liable for anything, they don't want to deal with this stuff. They don't, for a minuscule amount of money in the grand scheme of things, they have to come back on board. They have to have the confidence to come back on board also. And we're not to that point yet. So let me take a breath there after kind of recapping it. A lot more happened than that in the 8 years, but that is generally how we got from there to now. Mills Gaming TV. I had to think there for a second. Millennium.
You don't, please just call me Mills or Millennium. You don't have to give the yeah. branding. It's terrible.
I know. So it's been 4 years since we had NCAA football. NCAA football 14, I think, is being remembered as one of the best NCAA games ever made. People still play it. I still use it to simulate games, and it still plays a good game of football. It still looks realistic and kind of gives you that simulation style that as far as representing college football. Of course, it died before we got college football playoffs, sadly, the last year before. But how have you coped in those years without having an NCAA? Has your gaming time moved on to something else filling the hole, or is that still kind of missing for you?
Every July, it's still missing. Every time I see Navy football start going into spring practice or Navy football getting ready for their first game, it there's always this huge hole of what I could be doing. For me specifically, I still play NCAA 14 every year. I use updated rosters. I use pretty much the same sliders, but it still provides such a different experience when it comes to the way college football plays. It hurts me because they were on such a great path in terms of differentiating teams from each other.
I'm
a Navy football fan, so I get to use the triple option. Like, their entire offense is built around the triple option, and you don't get that in Madden. Like, pro-style offenses, yeah, you can play Madden, and you might be able to get that same kind of feel, but, like, spread offenses, triple option, wishbone, you know, Maryland Eye, like, you just don't see those offenses in Madden.
And also, sorry, I'm just jumping in, also the tempo. No, go ahead. Tempo, which is something that I see when I simulate those games, and you see some of the teams going no huddle the whole time, some of the teams playing a more pro style, huddling up. They really did differentiate not just kind of team skills, but also team styles.
Exactly. And like the coaching strategy adjustments that are happening in Madden this year, mm-hmm. that's something that was in NCAA 14, something you could change on the fly in NCAA 14. There are things NCAA 14 did better than any other game up until now, including the recruiting. Like, there are very few people that had bad things to say about the way you recruited in that game. A lot of people loved it. And we all talk about this. Rich, I know, talks about this. Kat, you. It had online dynasty. It was very, very good for getting a bunch of friends together and playing multiple years, building up a team, even getting past the first 4 years of rosters where you had, you know, quote unquote, fake players.
Yeah.
Custom websites with like news feeds that you could populate. It was uh-huh.
Exactly. I mean, that is. It's a lost time. It is a lost time. And college football, as popular as it is now, I know why they don't do it. I know why companies won't pick it up. But it just always feels like a missed opportunity every July. where there's just that big hole in gaming, in sports gaming specifically.
Rich, what did the NCAA football series mean to you?
Well, it was a huge part of my video game life. I mean, I played the entire series, like from the beginning to the end. Bill Walsh College Football on the Sega was a game that I played. I lived in a house my senior year in college with a bunch of friends, and we would have the most ridiculous, epic, insane games of Bill Walsh College Football. Ridiculous scores, running it up. But, you know, just that game was wild and crazy, but it was incredible fun. And then I played every version of that game every single year on all the different systems, PlayStation, PlayStation 2, Xbox 360, original Xbox, all the way through. And so you're not going to find a guy who has a longer, more positive history with that game. And so, I mean, that's the long and the short of it. And I'm also a big college football fan, as people who know me know, big Alabama fan. It was always a lot of fun every year to get that game and start playing as Alabama, because that's how I learned who was on the team every year. Because I didn't really...
No, they're not real players, Rich.
Everybody knows they were the real players. Everybody knows. Anyone who claims otherwise, you're not being honest. We all knew. You knew. I knew.
Yeah.
Chris knew. Everybody knew. But that was part of the whole message. It's in the game. Authenticity. Right? I mean, if it hadn't been right, it would have been a huge outcry from everybody playing the game, because that's what we were expecting. So, you know, I love the series. I was always a day one guy with it from the beginning, and it's something that that I have nothing but fond memories of.
So I sent out a tweet earlier today on the day that we're recording, and asking what are some of your favorite memories from the NCAA football, you know, from playing the series. And it really fascinated me that not just that I got a lot of responses, but the range of responses as far... I don't think there's another sports video game that would have given me the range of types of experiences that people described, whether that's head-to-head online or head-to-head in an online franchise. There's people who gave me stories about building up dynasties with certain schools, small schools especially, people with interesting recruiting stories, people who went through their lives in Road to Glory, the not a story mode, but the career mode where you control just a single player. So I wonder, why is it that, number one, that it created kind of that emotional attachment that we see now, that people are still so passionate about it? But also, why do you think it is that there's such a range of what touched people with this series, what stuck with them, Rich?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that it is college, and people feel differently about college than they do about professional sports. People love them both, obviously, but college, because so much more of it is personal, because whether you went to the school, which obviously has a big part of it, or whether you have family ties to the school, you may not have personally gone there, but you had parents or other relatives who went there. People just associate differently with their university than they do with professional teams. And I think that is one big thing. I think the vast number of colleges that you can play with across the entire spectrum of fantastic teams to, you know, literally the biggest struggling schools with the least talent. So there are all sorts of opportunities to experience different stories, from building up from the bottom or maintaining a championship or anywhere in between. You know, like, so I would always sort of pick in addition to playing Alabama, I'd always sort of find a lower level big time school to try to see if I could, you know, be a upset and win the Big Ten coming out of nowhere as Illinois or something like that.
Even in the online franchises that we would do back then, I would choose every year. I'd choose a different school. One year it was Oklahoma State. One year it was San Diego State. Another was Rutgers. Another was Wyoming. Another was Hawaii. It was just almost random, but just like that's a cool. Just had some kind of cool connection in my head that I could place with them, and then try and win with them and try and build them up and take on that challenge. That to me was what I like to do, at least as online dynasty goes.
And you can also, you can play a lot of game. You can play a lot of seasons in a relatively short amount of game time, right? There's 12 to 14 games a year, right? So that also lets you play a lot more too. And I personally was not big into Road to Glory. I certainly played it, but it didn't grab me. I just preferred the regular game mode so much that that's where I always tended to go back to. But that mode, I know, definitely also meant a lot to a lot of people because there's a lot of great Road to Glory stuff.
I love Road to Glory, and I'm weird in the sense that when I do those modes, those single player in football, I like to play cornerback, and very few people like to control the cornerbacks in football games, whether it's in a regular game or individual mode like that. And you know, they were never really built for someone to play that kind of position because they're progressing in those modes is generally stat driven, right? And as a corner, you're not really putting up stats unless you get lucky and get an interception or you get a pass breakup. But just being a lockdown corner is really not going to translate if the CPU quarterback never throws your way, right? So so it was interesting, but I created stories off of that. And it was some of the most popular things I ever did back in 2003, 2004, was these stories that I would do with my corner. And just following along with the developments over the seasons, and you know, what school did he choose to go to, and you know, each recapping each game, and then seeing how his ratings changed, and you know, and even back then they had somewhat story elements built in, not really like the story modes we have now, but they started to bring in off the field type things. There was a year with where you had a girlfriend. There was a year where you had to deal with your grades.
Owen Good wrote a really good piece about several years after that. Like, yeah, they were really kind of pushing the edge there with some of the stuff that they were doing too.
There's a reason why that stuff never reappeared.
Yes, exactly.
Mills, what do you think? What was it about NCAA football that really resonated the most with you? Whether it's the specific mode or just challenge that you like to take on?
Over 100 teams from all over the country, small towns, big towns. I mean, if you're talking about football, most NFL cities are big towns. I mean, there's a couple of exceptions, but there are even towns built around colleges that people remember. Like, that's experiences people take with them or currently experiencing when they play the game. It's
Madison,
a more
Wisconsin.
Yep. Lincoln, well, yeah, Nebraska. Let's just say,
these are places that I've just been to in the last couple of months traveling. And you were so right. The entire towns are built around the football stadiums and the universities in Madison and in Lincoln, Nebraska, these kind of places. It's really amazing to be there.
And when you say the names of a lot of these places, like, there are sports fans that can tell you what Happy Valley is. People, when you say Death Valley, like, people know where you're going. People absolutely know all of the lore behind college football, and it's college students. People find these connections to say, you know what, I could do that. Whereas an NFL player, everyone's like, you know what, I'm never going to play in the NFL. But like in college, like that's – everyone's like, you know what, these guys are fighting for me. I could have done that. Like that's like I what was it? Ed O'Neill, Al Bundy, like the high school quarterback. Like what could have been.
Yeah.
Like you always get that feeling of that's what I could have done. Whereas there's a separation in that when it comes to professional sports. It's a feeling of joy that we don't get in sports a lot of time. A lot of time we're spent in watching professional sports agonizing over wins and losses and things like that. There are so many individual storylines, like just getting to a bowl game, like just getting to 500 for some teams is an absolute occasion. Like people go insane, you know, filling the fields, pulling down the field goal posts, college basketball, just tearing down the nets, you know.
What about what about Northwestern finally making the NCAA tournament last year, right?
Exactly.
In real life. You know, being able to do that yourself in a college basketball game, so many Northwestern fans would love to have that. That's such a unique kind of experience you could have.
The small schools like George Washington. Remember when Jim Larrañaga got to the Final Four with GW? It's just like those are huge experiences that are visceral experiences for people as opposed to professional sports where there is, like I said, normally a separation. And going to a college sport, especially, I mean, football is affordable in most places as well. Like, a lot of people don't get to go one-on-one to a pro sport in this day and age because of the price. Whereas college sports, you can walk up a lot of times, especially some of the smaller schools, and be a part of the action. That translates to video games. That translates to wanting to do that. And again, there's also that portion of, with college sports games, you can customize them a lot more than you can customize pro sports games. Mm-hmm. You can make your own experience out of it. You can play one player. You can play, you know, online dynasty. You can create yourself in the game if you want. You can make yourself a freshman. And remember what you could do? You could create yourself as a freshman and then push yourself into Madden.
Yeah.
You could draft yourself in Madden. That was amazing. Like, those are just things you just don't get anymore.
So one of the things I always thought over the years was that, as far as NCAA football goes, so EA, of course, develops EA Sports at Tiburon, develop NCAA football, they develop Madden, and what you would see often was, it seemed like alternating years of which game was the better of the two. But one thing that seemed to stand out over the years with NCAA football was that they maybe had more creative freedom as far as implementing new features, experimenting with ideas. You got things like home field advantage in NCAA football. You had team builder in NCAA football. And then you'd often see features kind of implemented in NCAA the next year, refined and into Madden. Did you get a sense that the two games played off each other or benefited each other in certain ways, Mills?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of times you'd see NCAA pick up a feature that Madden had from last year. But there were also, it was almost like NCAA was the testing ground for some things as
right.
well.
That's what it felt yeah. like sometimes.
Yeah, 100%. Because they don't have the NFL ruling over them. When they made NCAA, yeah, NCAA had some rules and regulations, but it wasn't like the NFL, where the NFL is all powerful and has final say in everything. You had so much customization in an NCAA game. I think that led to more creative direction, as you said, with the games. Even, again, I don't want to keep going back to college basketball too much, but the last EA college basketball game was the first game that I can remember with different sets of announcers,
yeah.
different presentation packages.
Yeah.
That was mind-blowing for a lot of people. To be able to play two completely separate experiences in the same game, and to this day, as far as I know, still has not been replicated.
Yeah, you see the likes of an NBA 2K bringing in more commentators, but kind of keeping the same presentation package. So if I remember right, NCAA Basketball 10 had a CBS presentation package and an ESPN presentation
Correct.
Package.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So it wasn't just the commentary, it was also the on-screen graphics. So it made the games feel different and have a different emphasis on how important each one was. And so that was kind of cool. But of course, college basketball games, they died off before all the lawsuit stuff because they just didn't sell very well.
Right.
And that's why we're mostly talking about NCAA football, because that still has a potential to return, and college basketball less, less so because of its sales potential. But Rich, did you have did you always prefer one over the other as far as NCAA or Madden, or did that change year to year?
I really kind of tended to enjoy the college football more than the Madden. Mm-hmm. I played Madden every year too. It's not like, there might have been one year I skipped Madden during the Xbox PS2 era, I think I remember. But for the most part, I always lean towards college football. I think because I love college football and because it came out earlier and because it did offer that different experience. Let's all face it. Alabama wins championships. Not that they had a long stretch where they didn't, but Alabama would be good a lot in the game, and the Eagles would be terrible a lot in Madden. So that probably helped too. But yeah, I would lean towards college football every year. It was just it was something that if I had to pick between the two, I probably would have gone with NCAA most of the time.
Yeah, which is. Actually, the case for me too, which is funny because over those years, University of Washington, my school, was not good. Unlike yours, Rich, where you had the number one team in the country every year, mine was not good. So that's partially why I would turn to other schools and try to mess around with them. But ironically, part of the appeal to me was that I didn't know most of the players. It appealed to me because I thought it benefited how I played. Like when I play a game of Madden and I'm playing franchise mode, I tend to force, I'm mostly talking about offensively, I'll force the ball to certain players, I'll force the ball, or my offensive strategy will be predicated on what the real life team does or what the real life players have been doing. So if I have a running back that touches the ball 25 times a game in real life, I'll probably run the ball more. Or if I have a wide receiver who caught 100 passes last season, I'm going to target that receiver a lot more. So I would play more to the ratings in Madden, and I would play more to what's there for me to take in NCAA. So I felt like I was actually a better football game player in NCAA. And I don't know, do either of you guys feel like you changed the way you played based on either not knowing the players or having all created players after 4 years in a dynasty, Mills?
You just described the exact reason I don't use full minors in the show.
Yeah.
It's exact because when I use full minors in the show, I have expectations on what the players and the prospects should do. NCAA was the same way. It's like when you had those first 4 years, I towards the end of NCAA 14 that same year, I was not using real rosters. I was using the auto-generated name rosters because if you have an expectation with a player name attached to it and the ratings aren't perfect, you get disappointed when that player doesn't do exactly what they do in real life.
Yeah.
So it's like in real life, if I had Deshaun Watson and he wasn't a dual threat all world quarterback, if he had a down year, I would be upset. When, in real life, he very well could have a down year and not be a problem. But you have this expectation set because a player has a name and he has real world stats, and you're trying to compare real world stats to in-game ratings, and it doesn't always work that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough to translate some of that without, it's inherently going to be there. But I did like that about NCAA is that I it influences the way I play. So if I've got a Randy Moss, if you had Randy Moss in Madden, you could just chuck it up to him. But maybe chucking it up to him is not the best strategical idea. And then when it gets picked off, you get angry, right? Which is basically what you were just saying, because most of the time he would catch it in real life or whatever it might be. So it was just interesting to me when I thought back on that, is how I actually favored not really knowing and just – just playing the game. And now with professional games, you don't have that ability really until you cycle into maybe drafted players in a franchise mode. Because everything, especially with the importance now placed on Ultimate Team, everything is based off real players, current or historical, and then increasingly high ratings and insane abilities as the year goes on that you can obtain. Rich, did you play the two games differently like we're talking about, or was it not that way for you?
Well, pretty much my offense with Alabama every single year was run it off guard, run it off left guard, run it off
Rich,
right guard.
That's your strategy in Madden too.
Even more so in college football, because Alabama never has great quarterbacks or certainly the vast majority,
but they're not superstars, right?
Never a superstar, right? You just don't get, I mean, the last great Alabama quarterbacks to play in the NFL would be Joe Namath, Ken Stabler, right? I mean, there's not a whole lot of Alabama quarterbacks that became tremendous NFL quarterbacks. So, but they would typically have great running backs, and obviously through the years, certain running backs like Sean Alexander, mm-hmm. For example, you could really have a whole lot of fun playing NCAA football with Sean Alexander and a strong offensive line.
Yeah.
So, and the defense would typically be really strong. So, I mean, that's also why I would go play other teams, because it's fun to win the national championship to Alabama for a couple of years and play that kind of offense, but it's also fun to do things differently. And so that's another reason I would go experiment with other teams. And just like I'm sure all of you guys did, as Bill's already mentioned, right? You get an option team, you learn how to do that. It's fun. It's a completely different way to play the game. And you just go crazy with that. And then you go with the spread, 5-6 wide out, offenses down in the Texas Tech or something like that. So I would always try to do crazy stuff like that in addition to it, because frankly, the way that I played at Alabama, it was winning football, but it wasn't exactly lighting up the scoreboard.
All right. So we know why we don't have NCAA football or college sports video games right now, because legal issues and wanting, being risk averse to any potential legal problems down the line if you get too close to reality as far as rosters go. But EA had also lost the NCAA license, which is essentially just having the NCAA name on the box and some branding. NCAA license is not like the NFL license where you get everything. It's just for the NCAA name and branding. But they had also lost conferences. They had also lost Ohio State. A few other teams were going to drop out. That's when they canceled. So despite that, I still get a lot of questions from people about why don't they try something different and release a game with all generic rosters, or release a game that's completely generic but customizable. So I wanted to talk about why that's not a reasonable development strategy, Rich. Do you want to go through some of those reasons why we don't see, whether it's a big company like EA or an independent company making their own game, why it is such a difficult project and the money required to build something from the ground up, especially considering there are so many teams, there are so many stadiums, there are so many uniforms, there are so many different traditions for each school that have to be integrated, cheerleaders, mascots. I mean, it's got to be the most massive project if you're going to be building a single sports game, don't you think?
Well, you said it. That's exactly what it is. And even to simplify it even more, it's just a matter of money, because you have to invest a tremendous amount of money to create something now. And the revenue on the other end is going to have to be significant. And nobody in the video game business today is in it to break even. You're in it to make a living and you're in it to make a profit. And I don't mean that in a cynical way. That's just how you're able to continue to make video games. So at this point, it's only economics. There simply isn't a cost-benefit analysis that can be made in a positive way for making this game because of the EA's got enough going on to take this on without the promise of significant additional revenue. And the only way that they can make significant revenue to make it a really value a worthwhile venture would be able to bring back Ultimate Team into NCAA, which they had in the last version of it. Mm-hmm. Right? That's the only way that that this happened. So that's the one wild card is that because Ultimate Team has been established as a legit thing, that's one way that it's the one piece of the equation that you should have hope that NCAA football, because if they could find a path to make good profits on NCAA football, they would certainly pursue it.
So, yeah, as far as the Ultimate Team goes, in NCAA Football 14, EA did introduce Ultimate Team. Now, it contained only former players, of course, former athletes that were no longer in school. So you had the Barry Sanders, you had the Bo Jackson, you had the Tim Tebows, or I don't remember if Tebow was out of school at that point. I think he was, yeah. But basically, the issue there is how much profit are they losing because there is no players association as far as Madden, NBA 2K, MLB. They have the rights to a huge number of players. Every single player that NCAA football had in Ultimate Team, they had to sign individually. And the costs involved there are far more than just getting a single license that contains all the players. But that was their first attempt at a digital revenue stream, which we talked about for years being one of the issues for NCAA was how are they going to capitalize on that when they can't have current players in an Ultimate Team, or at least real players in an Ultimate Team. Mills, a lot of people think the idea of a customizable game would work. Personally, I think as far as general consumers, customizable games that are generic out of the box are just unappealing. They're not going to spend $60 on a generic customizable game. Do you agree with me on that? Is there, even if it was customizable to where you could do everything, and then you're facing, as far as a company, copyright takedowns for created uniforms, created logos that are reported by the rights holders. But even if you could do all that, would a game succeed potentially if it had the customizable options? Do you think is that even a possibility?
I don't think so. I think you'd get some hardcore fans that would do it. The OS crew that I'm just using them as an example, but you'd be supremely reliant on the community to create your content. You would create the game, but then you'd have your hands tied to what you could put in the game. You could make a college football game. You couldn't make an NCAA game. You could put customizable rules, but you couldn't put conferences. Like, you couldn't put the names of the conferences. It's as you said, and I think the last thing you said there is a key that a lot of people are missing, because there are some projects out right now that are trying to do this. They're trying to be, you know, crowdfunded college football games, and they made the mistake of saying they were NCAA at one point. Mm-hmm. And now they've changed that to be college football. And the last point you state is, if any kind of NCAA logo shows up in that game, the NCAA has the right to go into it and say, take it out. I don't think people understand. I don't think people understand that can happen. So now you're looking at, for better or worse, all pro football with no real players.
Yeah.
Except the ones that are – I mean, all pro football was a great game. It was fun. Don't get me wrong. But – there's not a sale, like, and now you're talking about those are legends. Those are NFL legends.
You'll notice there was no sequel.
Exactly. There's no draw to it. There's what are you gonna have customizable rosters, but you are not gonna be able to use the actual player names. You're not gonna use real teams.
Even if the roster, so I mentioned, you know, the possibility of copyright infringement, and you see that things were taken off Team Builder, things have been taken off NBA 2K's uploading system, and all that, MLB The Show, if somebody wants to claim rights to a logo, they can go in there, they can contact them, and of course get them to take it down, or else the company is liable for that. So what you've seen is that as far as names go too, I think they would be risking, if they allowed people, editing is even iffy, but sharing edited rosters, I'm not sure if companies are going to get away with that anymore. I was told that it may have even been a part of the settlement that EA had to get out of the O'Bannon lawsuit, was that player editing, player sharing wouldn't be possible in their college football games going forward. And, you know, when the day comes, but more likely when the day comes that players will be able to be paid to appear in the games, that's when you'd see life come back to this. Rich, is EA the only company that would make a true, complete college football game? Because we talked about how much money it would take and the immense nature of the project. But EA has a football engine they can tweak from. Like, it was a shared football engine back in the days of Madden and NCAA. They just tweaked for each one. And they have assets that could potentially carry over from the last generation, at least some of them. And they have the contacts, and they have the money to do it if they wish to do so. Is there anybody else out there who could actually, if they had the ability or the option to make a true college football game, do you think anybody else would even try to do that?
Sure. I'm not saying it's likely. I'm not saying I think it's going to happen. But for all of the, I don't want to sound like I'm doom and gloom, you know, with the challenges that it, and the amount of money that it would take to create this. Conversely, there are plenty of video game making companies or companies adjacent to the video game industry that have the resources to bring something like this to the market if they wanted to. And I'm not just talking about like a Take-Two with 2K. We all know there's nobody left from the games that they made back in the college hoops games, and even they had a college football game a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But they have the sports acumen, and if you know, 2K Sports put out a call in the industry for developers and designers to work on a new college football game, I'm sure there would be no lack of people that would potentially be qualified to do that, right? So 2K has the sort of DNA. I don't think they will, at least not with their current leadership. They've been very clear, Strauss Zelnick, saying that he, with a couple of exceptions, right? So leaving the door open, doesn't really want to do licensed stuff. He wants to own everything, and that's been obviously very profitable for
them.
And
there's nothing with more licensing than in a college football game.
Right, exactly. So, again, not impossible, but certainly not likely. You look at Activision. Now, Activision, obviously another billion-dollar public publishing company, it would be a tremendous risk to do something like this. But you do see things like this happen where certain affiliations of sports move from one network to the other, right? Or, you know, broadcast rights change in the sports world. You know, you do see things shift every once in a while. And so if there was a business model that could be made for like an Activision, they don't do sports games, but just because they don't really do it now, they have in the past, doesn't mean they won't in the future. Those are sort of these are big publishing companies. I really think that if it's going to happen, it's going to be a different approach. It's going to be somebody like Amazon, for example, creating a college football gaming experience on their platform that would not be an annual release, but would be a subscription service or something that would be part of an Amazon Prime kind of a subscription service or something like that. Because I think somebody like, for, you know, one thing that I didn't mention is that if there was some sort of a angel benefactor that just loved college football and wanted to basically just write the check to make it happen.
Hundreds of millions of dollars.
Well, there are people like that. So Amazon, you know, has the resources. And also,
if
they
you're one
have
of those people, go ahead and contact us at pressrowpodcast@gmail.com.
That's right. But my point is Amazon has a gaming platform, right? And I could see Amazon saying, hey, look, there's a gap in the market. Let's seize that gap and let's make it awesome. I mean, Amazon, what they have done with their original programming and Amazon Prime and building out the music platform.
And they do have a gaming department too. Yeah,
that's exactly what I'm saying. So like that's where I think it will happen, but it won't be a traditional annual release. It'll be, hey, we've got a college football video game as part of their service. That's where I think if it happens, it's going to happen that way.
I'll take it one step further. I think it'll end up being mobile before it'll be console. Mm. I think we'll see a mobile experience of some kind of college football before we ever see anything console based. Just because that's the easier way to go about it. It's got you've a larger user base. Mobile is the number one console right now. Like that's where everybody, if you put a game out there and get any kind of hook into it, you've got an immediately built in user base. Everybody's got a phone. When it comes to sports gaming, that's been a focus of a lot of different developers. Tap Baseball, the whole Tap Sports lineup, for that matter. OOTP has MLB Manager, which is highly successful on their mobile side. So all of those, like sports gaming as a mobile on a mobile platform, is I would probably see an NCAA experience or a, let's call it, a college experience. Mm-hmm. On there before we'd see a console.
All right. So what else about the future for college sports video games? So there are other lawsuits that could affect the landscape of college sports. That includes one from attorney Jeffrey Kessler, who is basically challenging the whole idea of amateurism. But again, that's years away. Sorry. We just need a way for players to be paid, to be compensated for their likenesses and for their own ability to sell themselves. And then we need the other partners to come back in without risk of legal trouble. But what we have seen in the meantime is colleges start to play a role in the pro games. And I think as far as like college basketball, which I mentioned earlier, did not sell well on its own, it can enhance a product like NBA 2K. In Madden this year, in the story mode, they have a couple college teams that we at least know of, Texas and Oregon, playing a role. Now, you're not playing real college sports, or real college football video game, but they are appearing, they are showing up, you're seeing a willingness to participate by those parties at the very least. Some still want to stay far, far away, but the developers and the publishers at least see a value in the college teams, whether it be in the NBA 2K story mode or now the Madden story mode. Do you see this... Mills, do you see this expanding beyond what we're getting right now as far as if we're not going to have dedicated games for college football or college basketball, that we're going to start to see them play a bigger role in the pro games?
Possibly a bigger role as a way to expand upon their story-based modes. I don't see it becoming, with the exception of like a mod, like there's a college basketball mod for like the top 40 teams for NBA 2K that you can get. It's PC. Actually, I think somebody did something similar because in franchise, well, in my GM, remember you can change the rules in my GM.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you can do two halves of 20 minutes apiece and actually play college rules. But I was told directly to my face that because there's a college football team in long shot this year, don't look for NCAA in any shape or form. In terms of it becoming a mode or something like that. From that perspective, I'd say no. From NBA 2K's perspective, again, I think it's used to expand their story. I just think, number one, there's too many, as you said, lawsuit possibilities. And number two, if they were going to do it, they would have to get licensed with every college they include. And I can imagine that becoming more and more expensive as you – if you went back to, like, say, North Carolina and said, hey, we want to be one of eight teams, North Carolina's going to be like, okay, that's fine. Here's the licensing fee. But if you go back to North Carolina and said, hey, we're going to have 65 teams, North Carolina's going to go, oh, well, the licensing fee just went up because now we're one of the big dogs. You're going to have to pay us more than, say, you know, Ohio State basketball or, you know, something smaller, like Rich said, like Northwestern. You're going to have to pay more for North Carolina because they're a name, or Duke or something like that. So I cannot see that becoming more than just an addition on to story mode or making story mode more robust in terms of teams you can pick.
Yeah, I was impressed with what NBA 2K did with it, though. At least bring them in, kind of bringing in a college atmosphere. Now, yeah, you're not getting a true college experience. You're not playing through a true college season or the NCAA tournament, nothing like that. But they at least added some sense of importance to that period in your career, that period in your life, in their story mode. Rich, do you see an expansion of any sort for colleges within pro games, if that's the only thing we're going to get for the foreseeable future?
I would love to say yes, and it has a lot of appeal. I just think it becomes a question of manageability of trying to have, because yes, the games, the college and pro games are similar in a lot of ways, but they're also different in a lot of ways with the size of, or, you know, the way the field is configured and the rules and when the clock stops.
Yeah. Clock, 3-point line, yeah.
All sorts of different little nuances that the deeper you explore them, the expansion of those modes, the more complex it becomes, and what's the benefit to doing that? Not that there's not a benefit to people who play the game, and not that the people who, the developers making the modes, don't want to do it, but at the end of the day, you've only got 8 to 9 months maximum to get your game together and ready and shipped, and, you know, it takes a long time to do this kind of stuff too. So I'll be surprised if it gets much deeper, but there's a blueprint there. And if they just decide that, look, this is of importance to us, it's there for the taking.
I'll tell you what this last week really taught me is that people are, they still love, especially NCAA football. They wish it was coming back. There's a hole in their hearts, in the hearts of many, for this series. And it's held up over 4 years now since we last had a game, and people are still hopeful and still wishing for college sports to get represented properly again in video games. Now, it's just disappointing that we are not closer to that happening, but check out my article on Sporting News. I wrote all about this, wrote about where we were, where we are now, what everything means, and potential for the future. And thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Press Row Podcast, going in on everything NCAA football and college sports video games. It was great to have you, Rich Grisham, as always. Thank you. Mills Gaming TV is the tag you want to look for on Twitter and Twitch. Thank you both for spending time talking about it with me. And we will be back with another episode of the Press Row Podcast next week. Thank you, everyone. Take care till next time.